Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and it's one of my favorite times of the week, as you know. I just love being here, so I can touch you, and you can touch me, and I brought along one of my favorite friends.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Don't you just love to hear that voice? Richard's such a wonderful guy.
Thank you, Mrs.
Having him on the show. And tonight, we have a very special, well, I think a very special individual, George Carlin. So many people have enjoyed his wit. You know, he has a special kind of humor that puts us all at ease. Apparently, it came from watching people. We are a funny group, aren't we?
Speak for yourself. Thank you.
I don't know. I think watching humanity would be fun.
Indeed.
So, Richard, have you connected with Mr. Carlin?
I have.
And folks, if you know what Mr. Carlin looked like, put that picture in your mind and put your attention in your heart, and maybe you can feel the energies that Richard is feeling. So, Richard, what's coming across to you?
George has a surprisingly powerful energy. Again, primarily a loving energy. Surprisingly so, actually, given he spent most of his time taking the mickey out of everyone. But he's a very, it's the overwhelming impression I have is this sense of powerful love. I would say also a sense of wisdom, but a great sense of integrity, of direct, powerful integrity. I'm not sure what I expected of his energy, but it is very, very, as I said, very powerful and very loving. Very interesting. Very central, primarily. Very interesting.
Thank you for saying that. I really would suspect that Mr. Carlin would have a loving energy. Doesn't surprise me at all. And so, does he have a message for us today?
Let's see what he's got to say. It is a great opportunity to come forth in this forum. It was not something that I imagined I might be doing, having not crossed over so long ago and in many ways still understanding what it means to be in this different world, you might describe it as. And I was not looking to come forth in this manner, but I am very willing to do so, given I was asked to come. And as you know, I was a great observer of the world, of humanity, and indeed the distortions that had been placed in the human experience, you might say, which truly were quite vast. And I guess you could say I decoded quite a deal of the way the world worked, the way the world was controlled by the rich and powerful, though I had not exactly got to the bottom of the detail of that, but certainly I was very clear that the average person was just a tool, you might say, a slave almost, for the corporate machinery of the United States, and I suspected elsewhere, though my studies had primarily been on the United States, which is my home country. I had travelled elsewhere, as some of you may know, but my primary focus in terms of understanding how life worked and how the world worked, you might say, was very US-centric, and so I did not understand the control exercised by the European bankers over the American way of life, and indeed over American government and power on many, many levels. But as I said, my investigations certainly had me understand that the power was very much concentrated in the hands of the few, and that banks played a very powerful role in the way the American system worked. So I had observed much of this in my life and reflected it in the way that I presented my humor, especially in the last 15 or so years of my life, when I guess you could say I stopped worrying about it all and simply focused on the humor of it, because really I found it all quite humorous. Yes, I was a comic, but I actually found the human condition quite humorous in the sense that people took themselves so seriously, and I could not take humanity seriously. And I expressed that in many ways in my humor. The notion that we might need to save the planet seemed such a nonsense to me. We'd been here 5 minutes in the context of the life of the planet, and it had been through so many experiences. How could humanity be so arrogant as to consider they needed to save the planet? It was just fine. And if we caused it too much trouble, it would simply shrug humanity off and move on for another 4.5 billion or so years. So I found the human condition very amusing. I did not understand the spiritual journey, you might say, of humanity in that sense, but I found the relationship that humanity held with regard to itself and all other life as simply breathtakingly arrogant, and I expressed that in my humor to the best of my ability. My desire was to try and wake people up to an extent to the stupidity of their perspective and the way that they looked at others, at themselves, and all other species that they shared the planet with, and of course the planet itself, as I say. My focus was on these things primarily. So I have now come to understand, since I crossed over, that there is a little more going on, that I've come to understand what you might consider the spiritual nature of creation in a broad sense, and also of the human being. I have also come to understand a little of true human history, you might say, since I have come to this other side. So all of that has simply complemented the perspective that I had already developed whilst I was alive. By and large, it has simply fleshed out that picture. It is not to any great extent in conflict with it, though I do now understand that there is a little more to the human journey than I held it to be, or you might say expressed it in my humor and my life. But I respected others one-on-one. It was the bulk behaviors, you might say, that I found distasteful and humorous. As I said, the arrogance, the breathtaking blindness of humanity simply could not escape me. And so I talked about this. I poked fun at it. I enjoyed poking fun at it, to be honest, especially, as I said, in the last 15 or so years of my life, because I stopped taking any of it seriously. I gave up on that preoccupation. I knew on some level that I would survive and live to a reasonable age. I thought perhaps I might live longer than I did, but life ended as it ended, and I have moved to this side. But I have no regrets about how I lived my life. And as I reflect on my life now, I see that in my own way, I was contributing to an extent to waking people up to the crazy way they view life and how they are caught inside this crazy, ridiculous paradigm as I see it. People are so blinded by their circumstances. So I guess this is my perspective on events. And I will say that having crossed over and having begun to try and understand a little more about what it means to be a soul and to exist beyond death, which I have to say was not something that I truly understood or expected, but to experience it now and to begin to reflect on the broader nature of life and to understand what is unfolding on the planet in this time, that truly is extraordinary. And in ways I wish that I had been able to remain present to participate in all of this on some level, but it was not to be. And you might consider I have sought to find ways that I can contribute to seeing this all come forth. I am not saying I'm playing in any kind of important central role by any measure, but I'm looking at how I can assist, because as I was aware in life that humanity needed to wake up, you might say, on some level, I now understand how true that was and how essential it is that people understand, firstly, who and what they are, and secondly, what is unfolding in literally as we speak, because I am able to witness the first threads of these changes beginning to occur. And it is very early, but it is beginning to occur, and I am able to witness it, and I am very excited by being able to share this with you. So be optimistic, my friends. Be hopeful. Be patient also, because all of this is unfolding. And above all else, do not be in fear and do not take yourselves too seriously. That is the biggest mistake that humanity has made, in my view. And if I was about one thing, it was trying to have humanity not take themselves so seriously and be so self-important. Do not be too self-important. Indeed, don't be self-important by any measure. You are not that important in the scheme of things. That is not to say that you should not value yourself. That is a different thing. Self-importance is linked to arrogance. Humility is the key. And most people don't understand what humility is or how to attain it. But above all else, understanding yourself and being at peace with it and not having a need to claim anything for yourself, that above all else is humility. So, my friends, this is really all I wanted to say to you, to be optimistic and to know that I am well and still ready to make fun of anyone that is willing to get in my way.
Thank you both. Thank you, George. Thank you, Richard. George, can you give us some idea from your perspective as what you see in the near future for the human race?
I am aware that Michael Jackson came forth and spoke with you recently at some length on the unfolding of events, and I would simply endorse all that he had to say. There is this transformation in consciousness that is coming forth in the world, and it is the first threads of this that I, as I mentioned, am able to witness. These changes will come forth. This contrast between the wonder of the possibility of what it means to be human, expressed initially through the emergence of that perfected human physical form. This will begin to emerge in the human experience, and it will be an indicator of the existence of a new consciousness present, you might say, living alongside the old consciousness, but protected from it. And people will have the choice on one level or another to step from the old consciousness into the new. And it will be there for everyone to see. It will be undeniable, despite the best efforts of those who currently are in control of things to suppress it. It will be irrepressible, you might say. They will not be able to deny it. And gradually, the media will be unable to suppress it either. Of course, it will filter out very quickly through the internet and so on, but it will spread beyond that very, very rapidly, as firstly, the group that work closely with you will begin to express an example of this perfected, rejuvenated form across the planet, and gradually it will spread out from there. So it will be undeniable. So this is what I see beginning to emerge. And as for the broader detail, I would refer you back to Michael's radio show, which spells this out in a lot of detail.
Thank you, George. How did you decide on the format that you used in your many humorous discussions?
I did quite a deal of experimentation in my early days of deciding to operate in this manner. And I recognized the importance of doing your homework and of scripting very carefully. I came to understand that in many ways I was a writer first, a comic writer first, and a presenter of comedy second. And in many ways that freed me as a presenter, because I knew I could write for others if I chose to. And so in a way it set me free in my performances. I was simply bringing forth the scripts that I had put together, and so it became a matter of delivery, of focus on, you might say, the act, because in many ways I was a comic actor as I brought this forth. It was a very carefully choreographed presentation, not only the words that I used and the way that I spoke them, but also the way I used my body and the way I used the stage if I was giving a live show, which mostly I was doing. And so I came to see myself as both a writer and an actor. And indeed, in my earlier life, I had desired to be an actor first. And then the comedy started to flow, and I realized that was my gift, to be a comic writer. And then the quality of my acting became secondary, you might say, because the power of my scripts were such that they carried the day rather more than how I presented them, though I feel I did a good job of presenting them ultimately. But it really was that discovery that I was a writer first and a comic actor second, that set me free to deliver the performances that so many have come to love and hold dear. And I must say I am very appreciative of the fact that I was able to bring so much joy to so many, and hopefully a little understanding to a few, through my comic performance.
Thank you, George. Did you have a sense of mission, what you came in the world to do?
I didn't see that I had a mission as such, but rather I realized I had some gifts that I could apply, and I could apply them in combination with some, you might say, insights that were coming to me about how the world worked. And as I said, when I first began to understand it, I became quite upset about it. And I, in a way, became quite paranoid about it. It really concerned me that that's the way things were. And then I simply let all of that go. So I cannot say that I had a sense of mission, but rather I recognized I had some gifts and I had sufficient drive and desire to achieve, you might say, that I applied those gifts that I was given, and the rest is history. So no, I would not say that I had a sense of mission, though in hindsight, as I reflect on my life from this perspective, I can see that I was given those gifts and in my own way was helping to awaken humanity to the quagmire that they were stuck in. And I realized that in my own way, I was helping to prepare for what is now beginning to unfold.
Thank you. Can you give us some sense of how one on your side looks into the future of humanity? How is that? Does that present itself to you? Do you see it in like a motion picture? Do you feel like a certain path is going to come to play? How do you see humanity's future when you're on that side of the veil?
Firstly, one of the shocking things one quickly realizes on crossing over is that the human experience of linear time is not how others experience what you call time. That in fact, the past in particular, and to an extent the present and the future, are far more accessible to one on this side. There is a much greater sense of the continuum of things. So it's very easy to reach into the past and in a sense change it energetically, not unlike a past life clearing that somebody might do when they're healing a past life event. It is not very different from that. In fact, in essence, it is the same thing, except it is so much easier to do on this side, and one is fully aware of and has ready access to all of one's past, or indeed all past as it exists, but especially connecting to what you might term past lives, those other fingers of consciousness that have journeyed to Earth previously and indeed to elsewhere in the cosmos. Now, your question is about the future, and it is possible to examine the future, firstly one's own future, by trying on, you might consider, various options to investigate them as to how they might unfold if you go down a particular path, if you make particular choices. You can investigate how it's likely to unfold. It's like this spectrum of possibility that you can investigate. And from those investigations, you can choose the future that you prefer. It's quite fascinating. Now, when it comes to examining the future for humanity as a whole, it is a little different in the sense that, in large measure, there are key elements which are preordained. There is a lot of detail which sits in possibility, and that possibility usually is a fairly dull color. And as one looks at things that are more likely, more probable, the colors get brighter until they are fully vibrant in color, you might say, as they come into the reality as it exists in your dimension. So it is easy to kind of examine these things in this manner and to see what is very likely to come forth and when it is likely to come forth. And also, as I mentioned, there are things that you might say are locked in place because of their importance in the scheme of things. They are locked in place as events that will unfold. And so I mention this because the fundamental events of what you call ascension are locked in place. There is no possibility that they will not happen. They are so deeply encoded in creation. Yes, there have been many things that have been put in the road of this unfolding, but as you know, they have been gradually cleared out of the way. And so there is inevitability about this unfolding that I am able to witness. So I hope this answers your question.
Yes. George, I would say that people are afraid to die. Can you give our audience some sense of what it is like to cross over?
Yes, I think most people are afraid of death almost right up to the moment of death. And then it is my sense, having spent a little time examining this, that most people actually in the moment of death are peaceful, unless they have died a very violent death, and there is very little opportunity to, you might say, embrace that stance. But I would agree that most people are fearful of dying. And I would also say that, as I see it, this is a stance that has been encouraged. Even the process of dying and the nature of death has been so deeply manipulated by those who wish to control humanity. The freedom to choose to cross over has been largely removed. It's very difficult to decide to what you would call commit suicide. But that is a side issue in a sense, other than to reflect on this level of control that has been imposed on the human experience. And there really is no good reason to fear death. If you understand the truth of who and what you are, that you really are a soul having a human experience, a spiritual being having a human experience, I believe is the expression that is used to describe this. And that is very accurate. And if one understands this, then the notion of death is not so frightening. In fact, the experience of death is an experience of liberation, not of restriction or loss. It's actually an experience of liberation, of freedom. Yes, there is sadness at losing the connection with those that you love in that dimension. But on crossing over, you can also track down those that you love that have crossed over ahead of you. So it is not such a bad thing. And I would say to all, do not fear death. There is nothing to be afraid of. Indeed, I took the stance in my life about the time that I stopped worrying about the human circumstance. I also stopped worrying about death at that time, I now see. And so it is one of the things that freed me to be so direct and so forthright, and you might say forceful, in how I presented my humor, my shows, because I did not really care what action anyone might take towards me, because I knew it was something that needed to be shared and I knew it was true. So I personally understand better now since I crossed over, though I did to an extent understand it in life, that I did not any longer fear death. And I would say to anyone that mastering the fear of death is very important, because being fearful of death can so often stop you from doing what you truly feel is right to do. And it is why I mentioned my own experience, because in my own way, I see that I conquered the fear of death and how it set me free to do what I now understand was something that I had chosen before I came to do, because I can see that that's why I had gathered the gifts that I had as I brought them forth in my life. So I encourage everyone to give up the fear of life. And indeed, I would subscribe to that view that if you are not clear what you are willing to die for, then you are not clear what it is that you live for. And I was quite willing to die for what I wanted to convey to humanity. Not that I wanted to die, mind you, but that I was willing to die. If somebody was so upset with what I was saying and they killed me, so be it. I was not worried about that to one degree at all.
Thank you, George. Can you give us some sense of what it is actually like to die? What does a soul go through?
As I said, there is this experience of liberation. The soul understands that it is but a temporary visitor in this consciousness, though there is still the, you might consider, aspects of the egoic self that remain with the soul. This might sound a little strange to you, but the personality that you have in life, in a sense, remains with you as you cross over. I'm still the same George, you might say. I don't have a physical body anymore, but I'm still the same individual that I was then. I am still quite capable of bringing the same humorous perspective to what I witness on this side. As I said, I'm willing to release my humor on anyone who is willing to get in my path. But, and so that egoic self struggles somewhat with the transition if you have not spent time understanding this broader sense of who and what you are. So the soul itself is fine, but the egoic self, this perspective of who and what the individual is or what it represents, is a little confused initially, but that passes fairly quickly. And as I said, the overwhelming experience is one of freedom and release as one crosses into this experience, to find that indeed there is much, much more that exists beyond that human dimension. It is unimaginable to most of humanity. So overall, it is a positive experience, and there are always guides that are present, you might say, to assist the soul as it crosses over and moves on, to help it acclimatize, and in particular that egoic self, you might say, to acclimatize and move forward. So it is overall a positive experience, and there is a review that one inevitably does very quickly of life to, you might say, witness all that has occurred. And this has been written about by many who have had a near-death experience. They witness this, you might say. And this is what you might consider the forerunner of a more detailed review of your life that you conduct yourself with a little guidance and assistance as you reflect upon the life that you have lived and whether you feel that you have achieved the things that you set out to do, even though you didn't know what the plan was. And for me, I was very satisfied, very relaxed about what I had achieved in life. I knew that I was being myself, you might say, and above all else, that is what anyone needs to do, is to be themselves, to express themselves, and to be comfortable in life. And I was all those things. And I, as I said, I came to recognize that I was something of a forerunner in helping people to awaken to the truth of what's happening on the planet. So all of that I found to be a positive experience.
Thank you, George. This remark I'm addressing to our listeners. We don't have much time left in the show in general, so if there is any question that you might have of George, you need to call in now, because time goes by so quickly and we'll be at the end of the show. George, I've asked you perhaps pretty much of what I had in my heart to discuss with you. you seem to me to be well adjusted and working on the other side, doing what you feel it is yours to do there. Can you give us some thought of the direction in which you occupy your time? What are you working on as you are there on the other side?
Some souls, when they cross over, very quickly seek to engage in learning and progressing, you might say. Others seek to rest, to gather themselves, to reflect on the possibilities and to reflect on their lives and indeed to understand a little more about the other fingers of consciousness from their monad, the other paths that have been walked, so that they can better develop an understanding, if you like, of themselves and what they represent. And I have been doing this. I have not felt any great need to rush off in some new learning phase, but rather I have been taking the time to understand the other fingers of consciousness that have come forth from my monad, to understand the directions, if you will, that my monad has been seeking to head in, not only within the human experience, but beyond it. And I have been very happy to just relax and spend my time building that understanding. I have, as I said, no great desire to rush off in pursuit of some greater knowledge or higher achievement or whatever. And also, I am enjoying observing my old haunt, you might say, observing what is happening on planet Earth, to see those who are trying to enmesh all of humanity in their dastardly plans, and to be aware that it's going to be snatched from under their noses. And so I, you might say, I'm glued to the television set of the human experience as this all begins to fall into place. It's like these, you might say, gear wheels in a complex machine that are gradually grinding the pieces into place. It's quite fascinating to watch it in that manner, as if there are these cogs of time, these cosmic gear wheels that are bringing all of these pieces into alignment, is perhaps the best way to express this. And I am finding this quite fascinating to observe. As I said, I am looking at where I can be of assistance, but rather more my focus is simply observing, because I'm satisfied that the core things that need to be addressed are well and truly taken care of. And so I'm really just observing so much of all of this. So I'm at peace. I'm enjoying myself. I have nothing to prove to anyone. And I am simply becoming more aware of who and what I am from that broader perspective that I mentioned, as well as observing the unfolding of events on your beautiful planet.
Thank you, George. Do you have a sense of the essence of God? We speak an awful lot about God here on Earth. What have you gathered by way of that information? Who and what God is? Does everyone over there have a sense of who he is?
It's an interesting question. My perspective on what you might consider God is a little different from when I lived on Earth. I was far from convinced that such a being existed, though I was open to that possibility. And there is this very narrow view, you might say, of creation in that sense, that this being that you might call God has created everything, and really it does not work that way. Rather, there are many beings who get involved in creation and carry out roles within creation. And indeed, the creation that has been done of planet Earth and on planet Earth has been done by many beings from across the cosmos, working to specific templates and bringing forth results and outcomes, you might say. So it's important to acknowledge, in my view, this complexity of creation. You might consider it to be a sophisticated delegation model within creation. And I have come to understand that there is a core creator being in the center of the cosmos from which all of the soul monads have come forth, and they came forth a long, long time ago. And that you might consider that phase of creation, at least in the context of this cycle of Brahma, is well and truly complete. But although I have not investigated it, I am aware that there is creation that exists beyond this cosmos. So how I see what you might call God is that there is a being that exists in the center of this cosmos that is responsible for, you might say, creating all that exists within the cosmos, though not all of it directly. And I would consider that being that is in the center of this cosmos as the one that most would consider to be God. Though it is certainly not my perception that this is either a God to be feared or a God that is simply expressing love. It is a much more complex picture than that. But certainly I would consider that that being that sits in the middle of this cosmos and has responsibility ultimately for the creation within this cosmos, I think there is enough of a connection between the imagery within religion on Earth of a so-called God and this being in the center of the cosmos. I would consider these two to be reasonably correlated.
Thank you, George. On line one, there is a lady, perhaps by the name of Ride. Do you have a question? Hello?
No, I'm... Hello?
Hello, do you have a question for George?
Yes, I'm a man, and my name is Clyde.
Oh, sorry, Clyde.
Well, that's okay. That was a bad connection, and the person who answered could barely understand me. So, okay, thank you. Hey, you guys are awesome. And I just want to say, George, I felt connected to him because people always tell me I look just like him, even before I knew who he was. I love his explanation about how he keeps his identity, because that's one of the things I sweat about dying, you know? I mean, I know I'm going to the good place, but I don't remember any of my past lives, so I'm thinking, you know, I don't feel any of my you know, parallel lives or anything like that, because I'm trying to get a handle on that. But I want to get his perspective on what he sees happening in the future, because I listen every week, and people have many different ideas of how this ascension process is going to expand and open up.
As I said, I encourage you to listen again to the show by Michael Jackson, because I feel that was a very thorough description. But I will give you my summary as I see it. And as I witness it, the beginning of this process is the emergence of the perfected and what you would consider rejuvenated physical form for humanity beginning to emerge. And it is useful to understand that this physical form existed in that time that you refer to as Atlantis. The physical body didn't age in that time and carried a perfection you don't see today. And so that form will begin to emerge, and that form will be visible, as I said, in your world. And this is the starting point. It is like a bridge, an illustration that change is coming forth, and that it is exemplified by this perfected, rejuvenated physical form that individuals can choose to join with and bring forth in their own experience if their soul is in a place to do so. And so this is really the first step, this emergence of this, what you might consider halfway house, because those who have rejuvenated will be fully protected. They will be, in a sense, isolated from those who are remaining in this consciousness, so that undoubtedly there are those in the current consciousness who would like to destroy those who display this perfected form, but they will be fully isolated and protected, even though they will be walking among the rest of humanity, and they will have all that they need to prosper and survive in this consciousness. So it will be quite an interesting time, and this will persist, in fact, for several years. And then the moment will be reached when all of those who have stepped into this new consciousness, you might say, there will be this separation where all of you will effectively move from this halfway house to the what is known as the angelic dimension, which is the highest dimension where beings have carried a physical body. So it is quite a special transition that will occur. And when that occurs, you will no longer be visible to those who have remained in this existing consciousness. It will be that moment when the separation is completed. So this is as best as I see and understand this will unfold. And I hope this helps to clarify it a little for you.
It does, George, and thank you. We have, Richard, I wanted to discuss the ebook that was given to us by Archangel Michael that gives a little information about this. Where are our ebooks?
Well, there's a page with them on, I will provide a link to that. It's a bit hard to kind of spell it out on the radio show, but I will put a link to those on the email that I send out after the show, which gives a link to the recording. That's called Earth History, Past, Present and Future by Archangel Michael. And indeed, you could Google it. I'm sure you would find it if you did that. But there is a link for it, and you can trace it down there. As I said, I will share that link afterwards.
Thank you, George, and thank you, Richard. Richard, we don't have a lot of time before the end of the show, and I wanted to discuss a little about our work with the Templars.
Okay. What would you like to say?
Well, pretend that nobody knows about it, and you're going to give a little idea as to what that CD is about.
Well, it's not a CD. It's a DVD or a Blu-ray, depending on what you choose. But essentially, what's on them is some 39 messages that Carolyn and I were given in 2010 and 2011, actually. One of the Templars came forth and knocked on Carolyn's door, as these beings are wont to do, several times a day on most days. And anyway, this individual said that the Templars wanted to come forth and give us some messages. Well, we really had no idea what they were going to give us or what was involved. And so this we took a series of these messages, and then there was a break for a while. Then we brought a whole stack more forth. So there's some, as I said, some 39 messages in the end, and they take up about 5.5 hours total. And our friend Adam in Greece has done some beautiful work with images to turn them into video. And really, what the Templars are sharing with us is the truth of who and what they were and their history, because so much has been written about the Templars over time, but in fact their true secrets were never written down. So much of what has been written and put in documentaries and so on is speculation, or in many cases quite intentional distortion to discredit who these individuals were. But in truth, they were deeply metaphysical, deeply spiritual individuals. And yes, they were warriors, but they were monks first. And so they were quite an interesting bunch, and they knew how to work with energies. They could see into the future. They knew how to travel the cosmos and experience that travel. And they had gathered some of the great secrets, you might say creative secrets, and they built those extraordinary Gothic cathedrals in Europe, particularly a series of seven they were communicating with us about, which begins in Spain and travels across France and ends at Rosalind Chapel in Scotland. Seven sites, each one associated with one of the key chakra points in the body, and each one of these are built on ancient energy sites known to the Druids, and they effectively map the constellation Virgo, which is quite extraordinary, since this was mapped into the planet when it was created. And these extraordinary energy sites are enhanced, you might say, harnessed by these cathedrals for extraordinary clearing and cleansing and healing and spiritual development purposes. And indeed, there were thousands of people who made that pilgrimage from Compostela in Spain through to Rosalind Chapel, something you don't read about in many history books. So it's quite fascinating material.
Thank you, Richard. We have 3 minutes, and there is a gentleman on line one by the name of David. Do you think we should try and take his question?
I suggest we do that, yes.
David, what is your question?
Hello.
Hello.
I know. Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hello?
Gotta be quick, okay. David. We've got a couple minutes.
I know you're at the end of the show, and today I was out driving my car, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if Carolyn and Richard would contact George Carlin? And much to my delight, when I got my email today, that, in fact, George was on the show tonight. So
how about that?
That was quite interesting. And I just want to thank Mr. Carlin for years of fantastic entertainment, from a young boy to, you know, getting his albums of all the words that I wasn't allowed to say, and to his later years, and to his later years of exposing the control structure. And I just want to thank him, and I'm glad to see his humor is still intact.
Really, and you notice he didn't use those words on the radio show tonight. He said he would, but I'm sure he said it under his breath. Thank you,
David.
And I'm sure George is glad to hear that.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you, George.
It's a pleasure, David.
Okay. Richard, we have 1 minute.
Well, let's see.
Wait a minute. Tell people real quick. You teach people how to contact those on the other side and converse with them. Where can people go to find information about that if they're interested?
Yes, we call it Right Brain Magic, and we have it on a website called rightbrainmagic.com. So you can go there and check out some other people's experience of working with this. It's something we can all do. We've been discouraged from believing we can do this really by teachings of the Catholic Church going back over a long period of time, and their dogma inculcates our culture more than we recognize. So it's a skill we all have, and so, of course, some people can more readily do it than others, but so I spend an hour with you and I help you begin to awaken that skill. And it fascinates me how many people just pick this up and run with it. It's fascinating. It's beautiful. So the website's called rightbrainmagic.com.
And Richard does those calls, and I have to tell you, he is a master at it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we're at the end of the show, and I look forward to next week, and I want to thank all of you for listening. It's been great being here with you and sharing things. Thank you, Richard. And thank you, George.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, George, also. It was fun working with you.
Indeed. It was fun, wasn't it? So, I look forward to next week, and until then, bless all of you.
Indeed. Good night for now.